The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is...
Good afternoon, Philadelphia, and welcome to, once again, the Conservative Voice at WWDB AM 860. This is Gary Heasley. I'm in the studio with Ada Nestor, and we're going to once again walk through the current issues of the day. Welcome, Ada.
Hi. Slow news week.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. They're all slow news weeks now, aren't they? I mean, it's just a tsunami that is never ending. That's coming at us hard.
You have to actively ignore news stories to be able to keep up with the other news stories. You have to kind of triage the news these days as to what's most important and what can wait.
Yeah, you really do. And when I think about just the things we see in any given week, it's just shocking. Now, if you're listening to the show right now, you could, of course, listen on your car radio. You can listen on the WWDB app. You can listen on the WWDB website. There's a listen live button in the top. So if your friends are saying, I don't know how to listen to the show, because we've had some of this recently,
yeah,
then you can ask them to do that. And, you know, there are lots of ways to listen. You don't have to be in the Philadelphia market to do that. But we find some folks struggle sometimes to figure out how to find us when they're outside of our range, because we have... It turns out audience members across Pennsylvania, we have audience members in other states we're hearing from, and so we don't want to miss anybody here. So we are also
adding some fun things.
Yeah. So here's what we're going to cover today. We're going to talk a little bit about the nine lives of Donald Trump. Right. That's on the flyer today. I mean, it's just astonishing that they've tried to go after him once more. We're going to discuss this second attempt. We're going to have Joel Griffith join us at 12:30 so that we could go through this rate cut and what this means and what it could mean.
Completely predicted rate cut.
Predicted, but there was a lot of speculation it might be a quarter point instead of a half. Right. And that seems like a small thing to people, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to have Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb. Now, Darren's joined us a bunch of times. Darren's just a great resource on world events, sort of geopolitical stuff.
Yep.
And so we're going to have Darren join us at 1 o'clock. And then at 1:30, we're going to take your calls and have you join the conversation with us. So welcome to the Conservative Voice. Now, when I think about this second attempt on Donald Trump,
right?
This is crazy.
There's so many layers to how crazy it is and how coordinated it had to have been. There's just no way this was some one-off crazed shooter. There's no possible way.
There's no way it was one-off. And the connections and interactions are just, it gets to a point where it's so much that's in front of you that you simply cannot ignore it anymore.
Right.
So you start looking at this.
Coincidences. The coincidences begin to mount up.
An unending series of coincidences. And when you look at them, when you look at these coincidences, when you see all the stuff that's happening, it starts to be a little bit mind-boggling. And if we go through them, you sound like a conspiracy theorist, right? You sound like you're insane. But what we've done, we've just pulled a clip out of Fox News,
right?
Jesse so this
Waters.
Isn't just us talking, and we're going to play that clip now.
So how the citizen of the year with a nice house and a good family turn into an assassin living in a barn with more felonies than money in his bank account? Ruth couldn't even afford child support. Primetime looked into it, and he was always behind on payments to his ex, always. She even agreed to terminate the support due to his financial situation. Ruth sold his house in North Carolina for $174,000, and then was also living in an $800,000 bungalow in Hawaii? How does a man with no money for child support suddenly start living in a pricey house in Hawaii and afford flights to Taiwan, Turkey, Poland, Ukraine. His neighbors say sometimes they wouldn't see him for 3 years. The house in Hawaii Ryan was living with is connected to his fiance, Kathleen Schaefer. Kathleen worked at Victoria's Secret. She's engaged to this guy who all of a sudden flies to Ukraine for months, and she's fine with that. As we reported last night, Ruth spent 8 months sleeping in Ukrainian military barracks, and he was rubbing elbows with cold-blooded killers. Why would you leave your fiance, who just lost her job at Victoria's Secret, to fly to Ukraine to recruit Muslim militants to fight Russia? And if you have $68 in your bank account, how are you spending thousands on airfare? How are you even feeding yourself in Ukraine? And everywhere he goes, he gets press, from the local papers to the New York Times to Newsweek. And every time he's arrested, he gets a pass. He's been charged with 100 different counts, and he's never served a day in jail. How's that possible? And after spending months with Ukrainian mobsters and scaring the bejesus out of everybody connected with him, he was flagged to the FBI, the State Department, and Homeland Security. But they all dropped the investigation. And he shows up to the president's golf course in a car with stolen plates and a loaded rifle with a scratched-off serial number. And no one's curious if Ryan Ruth was sent here on a mission to kill. And no one's located his fiance. It's not that hard to find somebody in Hawaii. And the Biden-Harris administration's stonewalling. They won't even let Florida investigators into the crime scene.
We were rebuffed. Our investigators were rebuffed just going to the fence line outside of Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach. And so I think they've taken the position, you know, they don't want the state of Florida to be involved in this.
What are they hiding? How do we not know there's more Ryan Roos or Thomas Crooks out there? How do we not know?
So, I mean, he really nails it there. All the coincidences, all the things that we've seen. There's even more than is included in that clip. How about the BlackRock videos? How about the BlackRock commercials and how both shooters were featured in their commercials? That's quite the coincidence. You become a coincidence recognition specialist.
That's right. It becomes a skill set, doesn't it? And we actually have a caller that has a comment. Wendy, welcome to the Conservative Voice.
I don't have a comment yet. I just joined, but I was asking, how do you ask a question?
Well, when you call in, just let Tyler know that you want to ask a question or make a comment, and we'll get you on.
Okay. Everything you're saying, I wholly agree with. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It really is. I mean, it's astonishing. It's not just the conspiracy theory community of a couple of years ago that was so demonized for these conspiracy theories. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a theory that there's a conspiracy, because as it turns out, there are conspiracies all the time.
Everywhere.
And it's a trick of language they've done quite effectively to take it even down to where you just say the word conspiracy,
right,
and that now has been redefined to mean something that is fundamentally silly and false.
Negative.
And silly, right? But here we just heard what Jesse Waters had to say about this shooter, an endless string of absolutely unbelievable realities. So what do you say about that? Well, I think you say this can't possibly be natural.
No.
It can't be. And then you look at it and say, okay, if it's not natural, what is it?
A coordinated attempt to remove the opponent that is putting them most at risk, it seems to me. When you link in the terrorism, the Muslim terrorism aspect, when you link in the Azov Battalion and what's going on in Ukraine, when you look at the response to Donald Trump in the debate saying that it was time to end that war, it was time to find a negotiation and come to some peace, the response was quite negative. They want that war to continue. In my opinion, they need that war to continue so that the financial benefits they're gaining from the money that's being sent to these places or spent on products being sent to these places, you know, will continue. They need that to continue. So
right.
I think that we need to look at some serious bad actors here. The way that it was laughed off or joked about immediately following the second attempt is mind-blowing to me. If it was Joe Biden or Kamala, If any of them were being shot at, it would be wall-to-wall news. There would be no end in sight.
Right.
I mean, I saw somewhere that when Reagan was shot, or when they attempted to assassinate Reagan, it was all the news talked about for like a month. So barely any news coverage. You have Vindman's wife out there saying he didn't even get hit, stop crying. You know, she ends up walking it back later. But the reaction is just, it's your fault. Your skirt was too short. You know, like it, blame the victim. Your right. skirt was too short. You had it coming.
Yeah, that it's preposterous that we have things going. It's so much that you can't possibly accept it. It just can't possibly be accepted. Can't be. And
yet there's an entire piece of our population, 30 to 35% of our population, who are barely even aware it happened. They've beyond accepted it.
Have no idea. There are a large number of people that sent in comments and said, hey, listen, we're glad that happened.
Right.
You know, I was shocked at how many people went public and said, I wish they had not missed. Actually, Vindman, if you remember this, this guy that was in Ukraine working in the U.S. Embassy.
Alexander and Eugene.
Exactly. And these are Ukrainian nationals who became naturalized U.S. citizens and suddenly rose to the very highest ranks of government and military. Mm-hmm. This guy ends up in the Ukrainian embassy at the same time that Joe Biden's getting paid by Ukraine through his son.
And through the impeachment, we found out one of the brothers had been offered like the Secretary of Defense position in Ukraine. We found that out during the impeachment hearings.
He said it himself as a brag.
Right.
That they liked him so much, they're going to make him Secretary of Defense or Minister of Defense, it would be in Ukraine.
And that's supposed to be good to us? I don't...
I don't think he quite understood that we'd listen to that and say, wait a minute, you what?
Yeah. Right?
But nevertheless, this guy comes out, or rather his wife comes out and said, don't worry, there was no ear damage. Go on about your day.
Yeah.
Or, so, you know, there was a text similar to that or a post on X. Public. The point is, they don't have any fear of being found out. They don't care that we know what they're doing. They don't care that the general public, at least those that are aware, are watching this happen. The level of hiding, of obscurity, is gone.
Yeah.
So if you remember six, 7 or 8 years ago, the media lost all of its shyness and came public with their disdain for the country and their hardcore globalist leftist agenda. They began to openly support candidates on the left and globalist side, openly attacked Trump and other pro-American candidates, and they stopped hiding.
Yeah.
And now it's gone to the point where, you know, whoever it is that organizes these things is willing to have a shooter sit there with all these crazy ties, this crazy background that's so solidly reported on, it can show up on a national network run by globalists at Fox News. And you don't hear anybody saying, take it down, or, geez, that was wrong. And no one's going after him. Of course, ABC, CBS, NBC, the rest, they're going to hide it, because that's what they do. But we should be concerned, I think, about the degree to which this has all become so obvious.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's not just the obviousness of it. It's the entire shift to, but he had it coming. It's his fault. He's inspired all of this anger. You know how I raise my children? I raise my children with the idea that situations are going to happen around you and to you, and the only thing for the most part that you can control is how you respond, how you react to situations. Now, I had a situation last night at my home that maybe I didn't respond so great to, so, you know, leave it to me to give such a great example. But I think that all of these people blaming others for their bad reaction to Donald Trump or things that he's saying really need to take a look at themselves and say, is it me? Am I the baddie? Is there something wrong with my perception here? Because the reality is, yes, there's something wrong with what you're being funneled, the information that you're being given. And, you know, we talk about it all the time. The Smith-Mundt Act was the beginning of the propagandizing of American citizens, and we've been living in that and as a result of that since.
You know, you're right. I'm going to take a quick moment here and just point something out. So we've begun streaming this show live on X, and if you aren't you know, able to get it on your radio, you don't use the app, and you don't use WWDB website, you can go to X, look up at the conservative voice, WWDB, I'm sorry, at TCVOICE, TCVOICE, WWDB, or just search for the Conservative Voice, WWDB. You'll find us, and you can watch the show live on X if you'd like. We're streaming there now. So what's happened is astonishing. Now, one of the things that's happened in the last couple of weeks, or rather, I guess, began with the debate that Donald Trump lost so terribly.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? I never saw this coming, that he would be portrayed as having lost the debate, and then ABC would lose a million viewers because their obvious work to help Harris and protect her and serve her.
And think about how much we've learned about that debate in just a week, 1 week.
It's astonishing.
Since we were last together in the studio. Think about everything we've discovered at this point.
It really is something. And so ABC is so obviously in the tank that their viewers... Now, if you're still listening to ABC News, this guy with the hair, whatever his name is, if you're still watching that stuff, you really have no idea what's going on.
Right.
And even those people are saying, okay, you've pushed it so far, I've got to walk. If you look back over time, there is a Gallup poll that tracks trust in corporate media.
Mm.
And it started out, I don't remember off the top of my head the exact numbers, but let's say 30 years ago, it was like 78%, 75%. In 2016, it dipped down to around 33, 34%. And that was in the middle of the Russia collusion hoax. People knew it was a hoax. It then popped up a little bit. During the Trump administration, it got a little more improvement. There was a little improvement in trust. And then came 2020, and it cratered again back down to that 33, 34%.
Literally. I'm looking at the Axios reporting of this from 2023. Americans trusted the media in 2000. 55% they had.
Right.
A deep trust in the media. We were raised to trust the media by our parents, I think. They were infallible. They were just coming to tell you the facts and that was it. And you can come to your own conclusion. But you can literally see the steep decline between 2000 and 2021, 2022.
Right.
And yeah, it's at 32%.
And that 55% was already a significant erosion of 20 or 25% from where they had started out. So this has been going on for decades, but then it greatly accelerated, as you just said, right?
Yeah.
Popped up a little bit. If you look at the graphic, it's a little bit more improved. Right? So people start to trust a little bit. And then boom, 2020, it craters. So they're down to about the 35s being their only audience. And even with that, ABC News just lost a million viewers. They lost 12% of their ratings. These are big, big numbers on these shows still.
It was so obvious, though. I mean, it was just even those people who are likely not in the coincidence world like we are, where we're looking for more information. They probably aren't even aware of the whistleblower that has come forward from ABC yet. They probably don't even know that there was actual coordination to what they did during that debate as the host and as the network.
Yep.
So they're basing that purely on the obviousness of the bias.
Yes.
They don't have the information we have.
They don't. And so
who's going to report that ABC has a whistleblower? ABC?
Well, so then, now this whistleblower situation is fascinating because this person smartly sent a letter to himself and to a lot of other people.
Speaker Johnson.
To Speaker Johnson.
Why wouldn't Speaker Johnson, if I had that pulpit, if that was mine and I had that letter and then I saw what happened at that debate, the next morning I would have called a press conference.
Well, that assumes that he would have seen it first, his staff would have opened the mail.
All right.
It assumes that he would have cared. So there might be a problem there, as we've seen with, the tanking of the SAVE Act, exactly as Thomas Massie said.
Yeah.
But without going down that path just now, the letter goes out. The guy sends it to himself. He sends it to others, which virtually guarantees he's not going to get whacked, right? He's going to survive this. And it describes precisely what was going to happen. What happens in the debate is exactly what was talked about in this whistleblower's letter. It's what we all saw, what we all recognized, and it's what drove a million viewers away from ABC News. Well, all right, but still, they were effective, right? And then this thing with Trump and the cats and the pets. I mean, it's crazy, right?
Oh, my gosh. The TikTok memes.
The memes were fantastic. But it's astonishing to watch people still... This thing's still working. People are still saying, wait a minute, cats, dogs? And it opened up, it was like the hanging thread that everyone pulled and the whole sweater's unraveling. The the reactions are still continuing. He's still winning the debate today. He keeps winning it more.
Yeah.
So when you think about that, there's a pastor, and we've got some time to play this clip. We've got a pastor who some of you may have seen, but I suspect most have not. The pastor is, and we're going to pull up this clip. So there's a pastor at the World Overcomers Church, and he goes into this.
Yeah.
And it's about a 2.5 minute clip. It's incredible. But we got to pull the clip up. So can you tap on the?
Oh, sorry.
So there you go. So we're going to do clip two. So the clip is this pastor basically saying the kinds of things that we've said, but from a totally different point of view.
Yeah.
Because he's not sitting here in this studio. He's not in this little community.
Well, and that's a different perspective with the same outcome.
It is. So let's play clip two.
When I saw the debate the other night and I heard what President Trump talked about eating cats and dogs, I thought he had gotten senile. But there are things that people don't know and understand that he was strategically trying to put out. The illegal immigration policies that are going on in this nation is getting ready to reshape America like never before. And y'all don't see it because you got a corrupt media that won't tell you the truth. They are bringing millions of people into this country, and they are shipping them around to different cities all over the United States, and the media won't tell you nothing. It sounded crazy, but it's true. Yes, it's true. Because people don't understand voodoo culture. Haitians come out of Haiti, which is a strong voodoo culture. And the reason it's going to be a problem, see, they got you thinking race. He just hate them black folk. No, it's about culture. Even the Venezuelan gangs are bringing their culture to our nation, and they are taking over cities right now, and the police can't do nothing with them. So every time anything come up about anything black folk, we always accuse it to be about race. No, it's culture. Voodoo culture requires sacrifice. In other words, bring me an animal, and that represents you, and I want you to lay it on the altar and give it to me as a sacrifice. But in voodoo, you eat the animals that you bring to the sacrifice. This is what the media ain't gonna tell you. I got a Haitian pastor because we helped to build a church over in Haiti, and he has enlightened me on different cultures. Yes, they get those animals because they need them for sacrifice. They kill the animals, and then they are taught that if you eat the animal, you will get more power inside of you. And so they eat the animals, and demons are the ones that come on the inside. I'm preaching up in here today. I'm preaching up here. They don't tell you that in the media because they're trying to hide it. They don't want you to see it because they don't want the people to become alert. So what's happening where they spreading these people all over the country? Springfield, Ohio ain't got but 67,000 people, but they brought in 15,000 migrants from Haiti that will change the culture in that city. They are getting people's pets and killing them for their own sacrifice because that was the culture in Haiti. It is true. And he was smart enough to put it out because he knew it would make people start going to talk about it and start looking. So whether or not you hate him or not, it's the truth.
So we talked about this last week. I said this over and over to people all week since the debate. Trump is willing to say the things that sound crazy but aren't, to be ridiculed and criticized by the media elites and those who follow them, to be called a liar when he's telling the truth in order to bring attention to a reality that people aren't ready to face yet. He does it every time. He masterfully commands the conversation and then commands everything that happens after it. He can literally just slide it. This is what we're going to talk about this week. We're going to talk about migrants being given temporary protected status, thousands of them being dumped into very small towns who don't have the resources to help them. And we're going to ignore and call racist those people who speak up, who complain, or who have an issue with what's been going on.
Right. But when Trump mentioned this, as the pastor said, I thought it was him being he's lost his mind.
Right.
I thought it was Trump had lost
every time
his you know, his mental faculties.
Yeah.
And now we hear the guy saying, but wait, I looked into it. It's real. Yeah, you're right.
And I've seen so many examples of that in the last week from different people from different walks of life. I thought he was crazy. I said that couldn't possibly be true. And then I did some research and I found out that not only is it happening in Springfield, but it's happening in other towns too.
So, you know, I have been spending a lot of time trying to figure out where Trump's support bases are and aren't. And you've all heard me now talking about the 35s.
Oh, yeah.
And how the 35% of the country can't be reached. They'd vote for a voodoo witch doctor if they were told to. They'll vote for anybody. They'll vote for Kamala Harris, the most disliked vice president in history, a prosecuting attorney that did horrible things. They'll vote for whoever they're told. And they'll do it cheerfully.
Yeah.
Right?
With joy.
But when you get beyond the 35s and you start thinking about who else is out there, we've got about at least 60% of the population that is really bound by what I think are the main drivers, right? They want a secure nation. They'd rather we not be invaded. They'd rather not have Tren de Aragua coming up and invading this country and MS-13,
racist.
Sinaloa, Jalisco, right?
They're racist.
They want safety. They'd like their kids to be able to walk to school without worrying about heroin needles and thugs and drug addicts and gangs. All right?
Racist.
That's right. They like, you know, they want prosperity. They don't want inflation and interest rate increases to eat away at their ability to pay their bills and raise their children in a way that is appropriate.
Evil capitalism.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. And then there's the freedom part. They just want to be free. And even people that don't think about the Constitution and don't think about its role and all the stuff that we talk about endlessly, they expect to have some freedom. They expect to be able to say what they want, go where they want, travel freely. They don't expect to be forced to live in this high-density housing or drive an electric car. They don't expect the government to tell them what to think and feel and hear. They want to be free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I spent some time in Philadelphia yesterday. I went down and took a walk in Kensington. And what I found is, of course, all of the things we know of in Kensington.
Yeah.
Right? I found all that. We'll talk about it later. But what I also found was a population of people who are saying, we've had enough.
Yeah.
We want a safe, secure, prosperous, free nation.
Mm-hmm.
We're no longer willing to just accept this vast corruption that controls everything that happens. We are ready to change. And so as I investigated this and I talked to some people and I started finding that there's a tremendous amount of support for Donald Trump in that community. And I asked the question that everyone asks me all the time. Well, why don't the polls show that then? If that's true, why don't the polls show it? And the reality is that the polls don't show it because these people are unpollable.
Right.
So I've started using this phrase unpollables.
But I think they're unpollable on purpose.
Meaning?
Meaning they can't let them be polled. If the polling came out and showed that they were strongly supporting Donald Trump or any other conservative candidate, it would ruin the mirage that they need to have in place in cities like Philadelphia.
Right.
They need that in order to effectuate the steal.
So, well, okay, that's part of it. But the crowd, the people themselves, when you talk to somebody that lives in one of these hardcore one-party towns where everybody's, you know, you've got community organizations that are registered, paid by the government. You've got everybody on the take. when you've got that situation, people are afraid to tell you who they support.
Yeah.
In fact, they listen carefully to see what you think before they're willing to say anything.
Look at what the Teamsters just did this week. They did not endorse a candidate, which mm-hmm. is shocking. They have a great long history of endorsing Democrats. But in their lack of endorsement, they did release publicly their Teamster union polls. And their polls showed overwhelming support for Donald Trump. So while they didn't endorse for president this year, they sent a very clear message to the Democrats. But imagine if the Teamsters are afraid to endorse Donald Trump, how dangerous is Kamala and Biden and their administration? Because I think the Teamsters are kind of tough a little bit.
Right.
I spent some time in the construction industry. They're tough guys. They're tough
people.
But wait a minute.
You say there was overwhelming support.
Yeah, 60%.
Here are the numbers. Harris, 31%.
Yeah.
This is a Teamsters research phone poll. The Teamsters calling their members.
Mm-hmm.
31% support Harris, the Democrats, the destruction of the nation. Now, that's eerily close to my 35.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You see how this 35 keeps coming back?
Over and over.
Trump's undecided, 6%. Don't know, 5%.
Yeah.
Don't know means probably Trump. Either I really, really don't know because I just don't know anything. I don't know how to tie my shoes.
Right.
Or it means
I'm too afraid to say
I'm not telling you anything. Undecided means, you know, maybe Trump. I was a leftist. I've watched what's happened to my family and my country, and I'm saying I don't want to do it anymore. There could be a lot of things in there. 58% stood up in a poll to their own union and said, we support Donald Trump. 58%, which is eerily close to my 60.
Yeah.
So you see how when I come to these numbers, I'm not just pulling them out of the air. When you look at the right track, wrong track poll that Rasmussen does, it's 60.1% say wrong track. And then you see neck and neck support for Harris, the person that's been driving the bus down this track along with the rest of these lunatics.
Smoke and mirrors.
It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So the Teamsters research phone poll lays out exactly what we've been seeing. It's fascinating, isn't it? Now, you come back then into Philly. People come up to the folks I was talking to yesterday and they say things like, I support Trump, but I can't tell anyone, right?
Yeah.
Or I really appreciate the fact that you are public about your support for Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't say it because of my sister, my brother, my aunt, my uncle, my kids, my father, my mother, whatever it is. There's some pressure factor, either a screeching harpy who's one of these people that just go off on anyone that doesn't accept the woke agenda. If you're not in favor of grooming 12-year-old kids with porn in the schools, then you're a bad person.
Transfer.
Right? The screeching harpies, they silence a lot of people.
Yeah.
Or whether it's just people who have been lifelong Democrats, multi-generational Democrats, they vote who they're told to vote for, or maybe they're on one of these neighborhood community organizations to get money from the state, from the city. You know, maybe they're in the game is what I'm saying, right? But it's quiet support. And the one thing those people are not going to do is answer a phone call from Rasmussen, Trafalgar, from any of them.
Or YouGov. Yeah, none of them.
YouGov. They're not answering a phone call. And they're surely not telling these people live on a phone call that they don't know that they support Donald Trump. Now, we're going to shift gears here real quick because as we start this second segment, we've got on the phone with us someone we've come to rely on a bit.
Thank
to help us navigate the craziness of our economic world. And what we saw yesterday, or I guess maybe the day before from the Fed in this rate cut, not surprising. But with us now is Joel Griffiths from the Heritage Foundation, an economist who, as I said, sort of helps us navigate the craziness of our current economic world. Joel, welcome once again to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860.
Thank you. Glad to be with you today.
Well, all right, it's happened, right? We've had the rate cut that's been talked about, speculated about for months and was expected. Did people expect a 25 basis points cut, a quarter of a percent, or did they expect a full 0.5%? What are you hearing from the folks you talk to?
So it's an interesting question. Well, the vast majority of economists surveyed beforehand actually were expecting closer to a quarter point cut, but the markets had already priced in basically the 50 point cut. So there's a bit of a divergence there. What's very fascinating about this is, you know, typically when the Fed begins embarking on its rate cutting mission, inflation is averaging at that 2% target rate or lower. This is the first time in really in decades where the Fed began its loosening cycle with inflation still substantially above that 2% target. And I know the markets are cheering, and perhaps even some listeners are cheering in hopes that maybe their credit card interest rates will come down a bit or their mortgage rates will come down a bit. But this is very dangerous territory to begin loosening the money supply at a time that inflation is still running above that 2% target that we became so used to for decades.
Yeah, and I mean, I've looked at it a little bit just over history where they've had the rate cuts when we've been in this kind of inflationary mm-hmm. period or with the jobs being where they have been previously. Should we expect a correction there, or because I think people are only looking at it from the positive side. Their rates may go down. They may be able to refinance. Maybe they'll buy a car. You know, things will begin to loosen in that regard for them. But is there some damage that can be done by taking these actions with our inflation level being what it is?
Oh, there's certain damage can be done because if you got to think about money as a product, and the interest rate on the product of money is the price of that product. So what happens when you lower the price of a good? You get demand goes up. And so we're going to see demand increase for more loans. And that's where the inflationary impact comes in. When you have the money supply increasing at a rate that exceeds the growth in the economy, you end up with upward pressure on prices. And we've got a lot of money on deposit at banks, a lot of that money that actually hasn't yet been lent out. Well, money is a multiplier effect. You put a dollar on deposit at a bank, that money gets lent out. And then you put that in deposit at a bank and 90% of it gets lent out and so on and so forth. Every dollar deposited at a bank can turn into $10 once it is lent out through the system. So when you have interest rates that are higher, it deters some of that borrowing. And so you have less of a multiplier effect. The danger right now is that with interest rates being driven artificially lower by the Fed actions, is that that money may multiply more quickly. That's the last thing that you want if you want to see inflation come back down. Now, there might be some short-term beneficiaries of this. Of course,
sure.
We know that the stock market has been boosted for several years now, thanks to the actions of the Federal Reserve, and house prices as well. So you have inflation not just on the grocery store, but in the housing market and also in your portfolio. But for a lot of Americans that don't have big stock investments,
right.
That's not so much of a benefit. And for those folks like myself that are looking to buy a home, or for those that have a family that are looking to get a bigger home, this also does not bode well because this could threaten to actually increase prices in that sector even more.
Right. So the rates will come down, but the house is now $100,000 more expensive and you can't afford it anyway.
Yeah, we're doing this at a time where home prices are still near all-time highs. And despite the fact that mortgage rates skyrocketed from 2.5%, 3% to 8%, prices stayed near record levels. So mm-hmm. we could see yet more housing price inflation as well.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, in our neighborhoods, a house goes up on the market and it is sold within a week. There are still, you know, battles going back and forth on pricing, and they're getting more than they ask for every single time. So, you know, there's a scarcity effect, I think, in the area that we are, that it's just like picked up real quick, and it really doesn't matter what the price of those homes are. They're crazy right now. If we were being taxed on our unrealized gains right now, I'd be in trouble this year.
Well, you know, and on that housing side, this is such a problem. I know a lot of emphasis has been put on some of the supply constraints. That is a real concern in some localities. But it's not as if we've had some population explosion the last 5 years. If you look at a chart of housing prices, you saw that steady increase from the last collapse in 2006. You saw a steady increase right around until 2020. And then you saw this explosion in home prices, where in most parts of the country, prices nearly doubled in just a few years.
Yeah.
That's not because the population was booming. That's because we saw the Fed once again artificially decrease interest rates. And at the same time, we saw the central bank purchase about $2.5 trillion worth of mortgages. They flooded the housing market. with demand, with capital, and prices surged. And yet rarely, and in fact, I don't think I've heard the Fed or Chairman Powell admit that they were the primary culprit behind housing becoming the most unaffordable market in U.S. history.
Yeah, they'll never admit that. There's no admission forthcoming. I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
Right.
I'm afraid you're right.
So when you take all that into account, you start thinking about what this interest rate means and the fact that it obviously has an inflationary impact, right? So that's what you're saying. If I'm hearing this properly, then are we not, remember, we haven't as a nation stopped these $2 trillion deficits. We haven't stopped the accumulation of debt at $1 trillion a year. I mean, sorry, $1 trillion every 100 days. We've got this, you know, $35, $36 trillion number, soon to be $37, $38, $40 trillion number. There's no stopping the debt freight train at the federal level. We've got debt climbing quickly at the personal level, and corporations are carrying a pretty fair amount of debt. So we know that we've got all those pressures. But do we have any way that we can see inflation coming down? Is there any anti-inflationary pressure? And the answer, I think, is that with lowering rates and not changing the spending problem, are we not facing, you know, and you've got the external factors, you know, the BRICS plus and people moving away from the U.S. dollar. Are we not at a position now where hyperinflation really is a concern, where we could be talking about things that we saw in South America in what would have been like the 80s, I'd say? Are we, maybe it was the early 90s?
Venezuela just, yeah, 10 years ago?
Are we facing the possibility of when we go to the store, instead of carrying a credit card, we have to take a wheelbarrow full of cash to buy some eggs? What is the risk? Because I think most Americans believe there is no risk. This machine just runs forever and there's no more. We got a little inflation, but that's now gone because we keep hearing that from the media. There's no more inflation. They think there's no risk at all. Joel, am I overly concerned about this?
Well, how about we get to do the good news and the bad news on this one?
Good, good.
The good news is that we're not likely to be at risk for a period of hyperinflation. And hyperinflation, I'm defining as, you know, that you're looking at 30, 40, 50% inflation per year. And that's largely because our central bank is independent of the legislature. So despite the fact that you might have former President Trump or Kamala Harris or people in Congress demanding that interest rates be lowered, they don't ultimately have the power to do so. In countries like Zimbabwe and Venezuela and Argentina, which experienced that hyperinflation, there was really a full politicization of the central banks. And so they could print money really at the demands of the legislators. We don't have that here. However, even elevated inflation over time can be destructive to families and to an economy. I mean, just think about what we saw the last few years, and you had inflation over that period since Biden came into office of roughly 25%, so over 4 years. So we're talking 5 or 6% on average per year. Well, that had a real impact on middle-class families, where, yes, a lot of folks only had a few thousand surplus income a year. Now they're in the hole by a few thousand dollars per year. So multiply that out over a 10-year period. What if you've got 5% inflation a year over 10 years, and incomes are only growing 2%. Multiply that out, that's a 30% plus cut in the standard of living for middle-class families. So even if we don't have hyperinflation, even elevated inflation at 3, 4, 5% per year can be absolutely destructive to middle-class families.
So to a middle-class family, you know, we've talked about this a lot. Now, the reduction in wages as a result of inflation has really been a downward pressure on their prosperity, right? One of these four things I keep talking about that are driving this country, you know, safety, security, freedom, and prosperity. And prosperity, you know, is under pressure. So they've seen this increase in cost. It's taken away their purchasing power. It's making them less prosperous. They've seen this interest rate increase. We know from the work you've done that it's, let's say, roughly a $4,000 impact. They've lost that prosperity. Now you've got additional inflationary pressure, and a half a point reduction will have an impact. It's a little bit delayed, right? But it will have an impact, as you've talked about, as you've just said. It's not really possible for us to understand how much impact that's going to have. I think this, now this is where I differ from most people in, you know, banking and Wall Street. They think the Fed is not a political organization. I think it's a hyper-political organization. I think they took this rate cut, not just because these regulations and this draconian oppressive government has begun to kill the private sector, right? But I think they took the rate cut because they want to help their candidate get over the edge, get over to, over the line. And so they take this rate cut. It's going to help certain folks. It's not going to help everybody, but it's not enough to really take the pressure off that middle-class family. So now if you have a little bit more inflation and you've got rates where they are, it just doesn't bode well. So am I making sense on this issue, or am I just off wandering in the desert?
No. So I agree with you. There's been partial politicization. And what I mean by that is I don't believe that the rate cut this week was in order to help or hurt any candidate. But if you look at what happened at the end of the Trump era with all the explosion government spending, that was supported widely by both Republicans and Democrats.
Yes.
Look at the Federal Reserve balance sheet. They bought up a lot of that government debt, made possible much of that spending. Now, they haven't been buying up all of the government debt. They've been buying up a fraction of it,
right?
But they still have been making this explosion of government spending possible. And that's dangerous because when government expands, whether you're financing that with debt or with taxes, you are hurting the economy. If you're doing it with taxes, of course, we all feel it out of our paychecks. If you do it via borrowing, we don't always notice it as much because you have capital that would have gone to private businesses and investment. That capital instead goes to the government so they can consume resources. So either way, when you have government spending growing at faster than our economic output, that is a tax on the American people. And we're experiencing that now, of course, with inflation. But you also experience it with slower growth because every dollar that is spent buying a government bond is a dollar an investor could have put into our economy for new factories or research and development that would help us become more productive and, you know, more prosperous and more productive. So that's the huge problem. What I'm concerned with both candidates right now is neither candidate has presented a plan to actually get us on the right track financially. Both are refusing to address entitlement spending that we know is bankrupting our economy. And if we don't resolve this problem soon, and I'm talking soon, by 2034, we're going to have either dramatic cuts in the programs, dramatic tax increases, or what I think will happen, we'll just have the Fed print the money to continue paying out beneficiaries. So any of those options is very dangerous. But on the other side, you know, one way that you can combat inflation is not just on the financial side of the government spending. You can combat inflation by having increases in output so the economy grows faster. Now, this is something that I think former President Trump was very strong on. He cut a lot of regulations. He was largely very pro-business. And I think if he were to have another term, you will see some reforms to the regulatory state that will allow us to be more productive. The cost of regulations in every job right now is close to $35,000 per year. But my concern is that both candidates are suggesting that we have other restrictions on business, such as tariffs, which impact not just us as consumers, actually impact producers, manufacturers as well, because a lot of the products, the items they need to produce goods, part of those are actually imported. So we got both candidates in some ways that are going to be suppressing supply. And on the supply side, I think, you know, to be fair here, objectively, Kamala Harris is far worse on energy in particular, because she's threatened to put some of her fossil fuel businesses out of business. At least she did in the past.
Well, that's a religious issue for the leftists.
And
that's,
it's not just a threat. They certainly took those actions in the first month of their administration in 2021 and have continued to carry them through up to and including the, you know, depletion of our reserves. And I think they only increased production this year because it was an election year and they couldn't possibly have gas be $5 a gallon leading into the polls.
Well, you're right. This is one of the things that has actually helped to ameliorate inflation is that we are producing record levels of natural gas. Actually, natural gas right now are near all-time lows, and we've also seen record levels of oil production. That has helped to bring down the inflation rate. But sadly, the current administration has sent the wrong signals long-term, where they are very clear that long-term they want to see decreased production. So we don't you know, we don't experience it right away, but we talk about these projects to produce gas and oil. These are billion-dollar projects. It takes years to develop, and a company would be crazy to sink that kind of money into a project they think a future administration would put out of business.
So when you look at the rig count, which is the indicator for what's going on in that industry in terms of accessing new reserves, yep. right? And we find new reserves, there are plenty of reserves out there, but you got to access them. When you get to the kind of pricing on oil that we had in the last 24 months, 36 months, it is extraordinarily profitable to pump oil out of a well that's already been drilled.
Yeah.
There are wells that are drilled after a lease is obtained in order to remain compliant with the lease so you don't lose your lease rights. So these companies go out and they pay for a lease, and the lease will have a term in there that says, well, over a certain period of time, you've got to at least drill the hole. So they'll go and they'll drill a well and invest that money to keep the lease in place, but they may not connect it
right.
to the collection system and the processing systems and all that. They may not go through completion, which is very expensive. They may wait for the market to turn. Well, when the market hits $85 a barrel or $80 or $75 a barrel, the profits are so extraordinary that even with increased fees from government, it makes sense to unleash all that oil. The problem is, You must continuously be drilling new holes. You've got to continuously be exploring for new reserves in order to maintain production. So is it, Joel, you know, we've not gone deep into this energy market before, or the oil markets, but what it seems to me is we aren't drilling enough holes, you know, 650 rigs last time I looked. At one point, we had 2,000 rigs in the oil fields of America. That was not that many years ago. You know, you would expect right now with these prices, we'd have 1,000 rigs out there. It's, you know, 650 rigs last time I looked. You've got then maybe wells that had been drilled but hadn't been completed that have maybe been completed. You got wells that maybe just hadn't been being used because it wasn't necessarily a problem. Those have been turned on. I think we're squeezing all the oil out of the system that's in place, but we aren't building the new wells. We aren't installing the new wells and collection systems and so on that are necessary to keep that production at this level. Do you think that perception is correct? Have you looked at this?
Yeah. So one of the problems right now, if you want to consider it a problem, is that oil prices have dropped about 40% since early 2022. And of course, remember they spiked when Putin invaded Ukraine, but they were already on the uptick. Mm-hmm. Oil prices right now are only about 10% higher than they were prior to the pandemic. Oil prices have actually been increasing at lower than the rate of inflation. And I'm not saying we should be giving Biden and Harris credit for that. Of course, the energy renaissance was well underway. And thankfully, the administration right now, despite them being hostile to fossil fuels, our federal government, thanks to our constitutional system, has limited ability to shut down the operation of wells on private property. And leases that were already given on federal land, they are very limited in being right. able to claw back leases. So part of the issue with the diminished rig count is just that the oil prices right now, they actually have been dropping substantially. But, you know, think about places like two examples here of how regulations can actually undo the benefit of producing more. Look at California, where gas prices are a few dollars a gallon higher than places like Florida. Well, that's not because they don't have access to oil. It's because of all the restrictions on blends, environmental restrictions that make oil pricier and gas pricier. And another example in the energy market, despite us having so much natural gas right now, record low natural gas prices, if you're heating your home on the East Coast in Massachusetts, for instance, mm-hmm. you don't have access to that affordable natural gas because radical environmental groups teamed up with left-leaning politicians have blocked pipelines that could transport cheap natural gas from just a few hundred miles away right. in Pennsylvania, upstate New York, into the state. And so they're forced to use dirty, far dirtier heating oil at a multiple of what it would cost to actually heat their homes with natural gas. So I think it's just unfortunate, despite the fact we're producing at record levels, gas and oil, despite that fact, many parts of the country aren't able to fully benefit from it because of all these onerous, unnecessary environmental restrictions.
All right. But prices coming down, put that in perspective. West Texas is at $72 right now and Brent is at $75. So they're not low by historical standards. They're well above the price of production. So if you've got a well, if you've got a hole that's currently in the ground, you definitely want to maximize production today because you're going to maximize earnings, right? So that makes sense to me that the industry has responded. And these investments that we're using today are investments that were made years ago. We've only got about a minute and a half left, and this is a complicated issue. But But you've got sinking demand from China and other factors. OPEC's outlook over the next few years that is that we're going to see a decreasing demand. You've got problems in certain markets like Europe where manufacturing slowing down. That seems to me to be the basis for these decreasing prices. Now we're feeling some of that at the pump, which is helpful to the economy and takes some inflationary pressure off. But I, if I'm right, there is an underlying problem here in that we're currently pumping Trump wells that were put out when he was leasing ground, when there weren't the regulations and the fees. And what we're not doing now is putting the holes in the ground we need for 4 years from today.
Yeah, I think your assessment is correct. These capital investments are long-term investments. And they're not all successful either, especially when it comes to exploration and drilling. I've got some experience with that from the past. They're mm-hmm. not always successful. You know, when you're a company making that risk assessment, the last thing you want is to also have to factor in that a future administration might actually ban your product or add in all of these costs, like with a carbon tax,
right,
for instance.
Joel, we're really up against it. We this is a fascinating conversation. We have to continue, but we're simply up against the end of the hour. Thank you so much for calling in. We're going to dig into this harder next time. I really appreciate you giving us time here on The Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860 in Philadelphia. We'll be back in a few moments with the second hour.